So ladies, I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me and just letting me come and talk to you a little bit about middle school. Now, middle school might be far away from some of you. Some of you might think, my kid just started first grade. Why am I thinking about middle school? And then I see some faces in here who I recognize because you have middle school students or you have high school students or you've had kids come through our ministry. So we're all over the place, but hopefully that in the next few minutes that I get to share with you all, my desire is just to encourage you and talk a little bit about what middle school and teenage years kind of look like just from things that I've observed in my years of working with students. But really my prayer and my hope as I've been thinking through this is that you would walk away encouraged and not scared of middle school. Because I think that so often middle school can be a scary thing to think about what it's like. So I want to start with taking a minute to think about, think back to what life was like in middle school for each of you. So I'm just going to stop and just think what life was like in middle school. I often have my brand new middle school small group leaders do this just to kind of help them start thinking like a middle schooler. And so I have them like think through like, just kind of what was happening in the world around you, and that usually starts to trigger kind of the emotions and, for some of us like me, the repressed memories of the misery of middle school. but yeah, so think about like what the world was like. So who was president? Or what was the price of gas? What were like exciting pieces of technology? Is this helping anybody jog memories? Right, life was really different. I remember, the most like exciting piece of technology was for me was that like MP3 players were new, and they were just beginning to figure out like how those worked. And but life was different, and so there are things that kind of change about life. But then there are other things that don't change about middle school. It's a time of a lot of change and a lot of new development in the life of a student or a teen as they're reaching those middle school years. And like I said, they have a reputation of being a pretty scary phase of life. And they get a bad rap in kind of pop culture and movies and songs and TV and, even some books and sometimes things like that. Just middle school, they're years to just get through. They're horrible. If you survive them, you're lucky. And they're not positive years in my memory. They're pretty miserable for me. We lived in North Carolina when I started middle school, and I started in sixth grade. So sixth grade and seventh grade, I remember almost every day coming home, looking at my mom, and just crying. Just sobbed. Because there was some reason every day for tears. And my mom every day said, you don't have to go back. I can homeschool you. And I said, but when will I see my friends? And so every day I went back. And the next day I came home and I sobbed. And she said, you don't have to go back. It was our daily routine. But I got out without being too banged up. Good news for you, my parents survived without being too banged up. So there's hope as you approach the middle school years. There is hope. So what are some fears about this age? I think that both the middle school students and both parents, everybody has fears, things that we are scared about or nervous about as you approach the middle school days. So I think about, for middle schoolers, just remembering my own fears, or then even as I talk to kids in the youth group, talk to rising seventh graders, and as we hang out over the summer and they talk about the things that they're looking forward to or not looking forward to about middle school, they're scared of things like, will I be able to get my locker open? I have to change clothes for PE. What's that going to be like? Will I be able to find my classes? Will I show up to my classes on time? I have to talk to kids of the opposite sex. I have to, if they're worried about not getting detention or being popular or afraid of having perpetual bad hair days, or they're afraid, they're nervous about acne or their bodies are changing. They might be immortalized forever with a bad yearbook picture, or an Instagram picture might go viral or something. They might not make the sports team, or you know, they're worried about, will I be too different? Am I going to have to eat lunch alone? Am I going to disappoint my parents? What are all these new responsibilities that I have to juggle? And then they start to, like, ask questions about themselves and the world around them, and, you know, questions about belief, or just wondering, am I normal? Am I weird? Am I going to be okay? Those are a lot of things that I think are nerve-wracking for students. And then parents have fears too. You guys could probably add to this list. But you're worried about things like your kid won't be able to find their class. They won't be able to open their locker. They might miss the bus. They'll have their feelings hurt. You want them to have someone to eat lunch with too. You're worried about their academics. You are scared that they might fall in with the wrong crowd. They might have the wrong friend group. They might get in trouble. They might rebel. They might, you know, decide not to follow Christ. There's all sorts of, I'm sure, that you could add to my list of fears there. But there are a lot of things that are new, a lot of things that are different. And I think a good summary word for middle school and the teenage years is transition. But in spite of all of the fear and turmoil and uncertainty, I think there are really a lot of things to be excited about the teen years. They're my favorite years. That's why I've spent 9 years working in student ministry at Emmanuel. I planned on being here for a summer internship. This is the longest summer internship and the best paid summer internship in the history of ever. but they really are, it's my favorite time of life, because I think that it's so exciting to get to be part of this phase as they're beginning to figure out who they are, what they can do. They're exploring new skills and abilities. They're figuring out what they're really interested in. They're figuring out what things excite them, what they believe in, what they really think about the beliefs. They're taking knowledge, you know, years of knowledge that you have so faithfully poured into them, and they're beginning to process it for themselves and figure out, how do I make this thing that I know fit with the world around me? They're beginning to figure out what they value and how to value themselves, and they're hoping and dreaming for the future. So I think middle school is really fun. In spite of all of these changes and things to be scared about that I listed, I think it really is a fun time. Unfortunately, I think our culture's common parental perspective or common stance on these years is just to survive, right? And, you know, you hear parents talk about, I'm just going to get through. You know, we just got to, you know, the teen years are coming and we just got to make it through. We've got to survive. Instead of an attitude of engagement, of let me interact and engage and see what this adventure could be like. I think often parents, our culture paints parents as combatants, locked in a war, fighting battles with their kids, and the culture sets kids up to see parents as their enemy and, you know, sets parents up for that as well. And so, you know, parents expect their kids to rebel or to disappoint. We excuse away bad behavior, saying it's just hormones or it's just age and it's just self-discovery and they'll figure it out later, and, you know, I'll feed them, I'll clothe them, I'll make sure they get to school, and then I'll check back in once they're not a crazy teenager anymore. But I think, like I said, there's so much life and joy and fun to be had in the middle school years and in the rest of the teen years. And then more importantly, I think there are so many opportunities in this stage of life when you can point your kids to Christ, where you can point them to the truth of the gospel, which will lay a solid foundation for them and for a lifelong engagement with the world that we live in. There's just so many opportunities and so many moments in this teenage phase that are exciting to me. You know, kids are developmentally in a place where they can internalize and put into practice the things that you've been teaching them their whole lives. And so middle school doesn't have to be scary. So I think it's a great period of opportunity. So when Tyler invited me to speak, she suggested that I might want to use this time to share with you all what I would say to the parents of the students that I work with in youth ministry. Some of you happen to be those parents, so you get to hear it too. And so this is what I would want to say, and I would want, and I hope it's an encouragement and not something that is overwhelming. You, as parents, are the greatest influence in the life of your child. Your example, the things that you do and the things that you say, carry more weight than any other voice or influence in their world. There are so many different voices speaking into the lives of your children. Teachers, friends, TV, movies, video games, music, books, magazines, celebrities, whoever's YouTube channel they might happen to be watching, Sunday school teachers, coaches, babysitters. There's all sorts of people who are clamoring for their attention. And each voice has a message for your child, some sort of instruction about how they should live their lives or what they should do to succeed. And I think that one of the biggest battles during the teen years is a battle for the heart. It's a battle for the affections of your child. Not unlike the battles that we face as adults, but there are unique challenges for each stage of life. And so I think the teenage years are key years for figuring out how they should respond to the different voices in their world, and whose influence should they listen to. So in the midst of all the noise, it's so easy for our kids to get distracted from the truth and to begin to pursue the wrong things. And so I know it's easy for me to listen to the wrong voices, and so it's so much easier for our teens to do that. And so what I really want you all to hear and hopefully to be empowered by and encouraged by is that you're their greatest influence in their life. I don't want that to be overwhelming, but I want that to be something that is encouraging to you. You have the privilege and the responsibility of being the most influential voice in your child. It's the case now when they're in elementary school. It doesn't change once they become a teenager. It's your God-ordained role, and it's a privilege. Deuteronomy chapter 6 talks about the way that God designed the family to work. He designed the family to be the primary and most influential learning community in a child's life. The family is the place where God thinks children will best learn truth so that they can then go out into the world and live lives which honor God. So your family is a better classroom than any they will sit in during their school years. You and your husband are better than any coach, teacher, small group leader, or mentor they will ever have. You live with them. You're there when they go to bed at night. You're there when they get up in the morning. You're there for the mundane things, and you're there for the exciting things. You have unique opportunities to speak into the lives of your children, which no one else will ever have. You're the one that they look to for answers to questions about their life, whether they say it out loud or not. You're the ones that they're looking to for answers. You're the ones that they're looking to for how to respond to all of the things that the world throws at them. And you're the ones that they look to for support when the world feels like it's falling apart. And like I said, good or bad, they'll see, good or bad, they will do what they see you doing. As a youth worker, I can talk all I want about what it looks like to navigate the teenage years as a Christian. I can say lots of good words. I can do flashy programs. I can have, I don't know, silly string and glow-in-the-dark things and lots of pizza, which is youth ministry. I'm planning a lock-in Friday night, and that's what we're doing, silly strings and glow-in-the-dark things and lots of pizza. But if I'm not if you are not teaching and modeling similar choices and behaviors at home to what we're saying when they're here at church, it doesn't make a difference what I'm saying. I might as well just be speaking gibberish, because you are the greatest influence in their lives. So I see kids maybe 3 hours a week for youth group activities, an hour on Sunday morning. We've got 2 hours on Wednesday night. Out of about 160 to 180 kids, I get 30 seconds to 2 minutes a week with kids, with maybe 50 of them. I'm not connecting meaningful, long conversations with most of these kids. But you, as their parents, have so much more time than 2 minutes to interact with them. So what makes my influence, or any youth leader or mentor or Sunday school teacher, what makes our influence strongest is when we're simply reinforcing what mom and dad are saying and doing at home. And that's really, student ministry, this is kind of an aside, but that really is our goal, is to come alongside parents in discipling their kids, for us to be not introducing new things, really, but to be reinforcing and just sharpening the things that you are already pouring into your kids. So my counsel about social media use, like time spent or things posted, content that they interact with, it's valid when I'm continuing conversations that are already had at home, and when they see you using social media in a healthy way. If you aren't doing that, well, I can say, hey, you probably shouldn't post dirty jokes on Twitter all I want, but it doesn't make a whole lot of difference. I can encourage a student to pursue sexual purity when they see their parents doing the same thing, and when they're having honest and sometimes hard or uncomfortable conversations with their parents about that topic. And I think most importantly, the students that I've interacted with who develop their own strong personal relationships with Christ as teens are the ones whose parents let their kids see them in the midst of their own personal pursuit of our Savior. Not aiming for the perfectly Instagrammed moment where you have the beautiful latte and the journal that you got off of from Etsy and a perfectly illustrated page in your journaling Bible. That's not reality. But an authentic, imperfect pursuit of Christ, letting your kids see that is what's going to help them want to pursue that for themselves. Discuss with your kids the things that you're learning, the things which are challenging for you. Let them hear you praying for yourself, for your family, for them, for others. Listen to sermons or Christian podcasts in the car with them and talk about them while you're driving around. You don't have to be perfect or get it right all the time, but your children need to see an authentic and faithful pursuit of Christ from you. Just like when they're little and they want to dress up like mommy or daddy and their career goals are, you know, princesses or firefighters or whatever it is that you all do, they'll continue to mimic you and model their life after you well into their teen years. So my hope and my prayer is that you're modeling a faithful pursuit of Jesus Christ in your home. So that's all good, but that's not, I mean, we all kind of often want like the practical, okay, so what do I do as I approach these middle school years? What are things that you can do? What are habits that you can put in place now? And what, if anything, would I encourage you to do differently when your child is in middle school? So as we've already established, I'm not married, don't have kids, not a mom. So I'm by no means a parenting expert, but I was a middle school student once, and I do spend a good bit of time thinking about them and how they operate and how to best encourage and equip them to live lives that honor God. And so I thought through some things that were helpful for me as a middle school student. I kind of thought back to some of the things that I'm grateful that my parents did with our family, that I remember them starting when I was in elementary school and continuing all the way through. I mean, my mom is still faithfully doing a lot of these things with my youngest sister, who's a sophomore in high school now. So I thought that I would share those things that are kind of part of my story, and hopefully they'll encourage you. If you want advice from a parent who survived middle school, I see a lot of them in this room. You know, there are women in this room who are very wise and who have done that. I'd encourage you to find a mom who's a little bit ahead of you and pick her brain. Read good books. So I recommended this book, Age of Opportunity, because I asked my mom what her favorite book was about parenting, particularly parenting teens. And I've read most of it myself. And as I was reading it, I kept thinking, this is exactly what I want to say to them. This is exactly what I want to say to them. So I'd encourage you all to read this, because I think that he's got a lot of wisdom about taking advantage of this season of life when you really have unique opportunities and unique insights into the life of your children. It's Paul David Tripp. Hold it up again. There, okay. So here, just in no particular order of importance, I'm just kind of the first things that came to mind. Some of the things that my parents did that were helpful to me in that Some of them I recognized as a teenager. This is good. I appreciate this. But a lot of the things I recognized later, kind of looking back and go, oh, I appreciate that my parents did this for our family. So I think time and the way that time was used very intentionally, I think can think of a couple of different examples. But time was a priority, and my parents really maximized the time that we had together. So when we were in the car, we were talking about life, particularly when I was in the car with my dad. We'd listen to the radio, but it wasn't just like background noise for us to be kind of off in our own little worlds. We'd listen to whatever songs were popular on the radio that, you know, all my friends at school were listening to. But we weren't just listening, and then we talked about the content. We talked about not being judgmental or critical about the content, and it definitely wasn't him being like, why are you listening to this? You shouldn't be filling your mind with these things. But it was more talking about, what does this song mean? What do you think the writer was thinking when they wrote this song? Why does this song resonate with our culture? What does it say about our culture? What is a godly response to the messages that are in this song? Discussing possible motivations or things like that. Another thing I appreciated about time was after school. My mom was home pretty much every day when I got home from school, from kindergarten all the way on, which was something that was a blessing. And I know that not every family is able to have a situation like that. But she took time to debrief my day every single day. So we started in elementary school. I remember wanting to tell her, I won the spelling bee, or, Tommy Fisher chased me around the playground and he yelled, Kara likes to walk a lot. I really am still bitter, and if I could have come up with a good comeback. But my mom listened. She listened to those things in elementary school, and they were important to her. And, she paused her day to listen to me talk about mine. And we laughed, and we cried, as I said earlier. We analyzed, and we prayed about my school days together. She was and she still is a safe place and a sounding board. So it was so important to me that she paused her day to talk to me and to hear what my day was like. When I was in middle school, she was homeschooling my brother and sister, and she paused their school day too to talk to me. And so I think that was important because it communicated value and it established relationship and trust. And she was who I had always gone to talk about all sorts of things. So when big things came along, she was still the first person that I went to talk about things. And then we had weekly family time. It was structured differently in different phases of our family's life, but my parents fought for consistent time for the whole Walker family to be together, enjoying each other's company. And so time, I think, was a really important thing. I appreciate how my parents used time and stewarded our family's time. And like I said, it contributed to them being my go-to advisors, confidants, and friends, which was so helpful as I navigated the tricky teen years. And I didn't know to do anything differently because that was something that had been established from a really young age. They modeled a personal devotional life. I kind of touched on this earlier. The things that I encouraged you all to do, in front of your children, to read scripture in front of your children, to talk about the things that you were studying, that was what my parents modeled for me. So growing up, my parents were in full-time vocational ministry. And if they were doing ministry somewhere, we were there with them. So I heard them teaching and admonishing and discipling a lot of people. But what made it stick for me was that at home, I got to see that they practiced what they preached. They were consistent. The things that they were saying had validity because I knew it was what they were doing. And so more than just watching their personal devotional life, they taught me how to study scripture for myself and how to apply it to my life. And they helped me to develop a personal devotional habit at a young age. And because I saw it as a priority in their lives, even when life was busy, even when life was hard, it became a habit for me, and it became a priority in my life, even in the busy and the hard seasons, that my time with the Lord was something that was a priority. We discussed things in advance. So if there was like some a serious or potentially controversial topic that was going to be discussed at school, we talked about it at home beforehand. You know, I remember being in middle school and my dad knowing that in my sixth grade science class we were going to talk about evolution. And I hadn't really interacted with the topic before. So he sat down. We spent a couple of weeknights talking through that particular topic and a biblical perspective. I remember sitting at the kitchen table with the Bible open and reading Genesis and the biblical account of creation. And so I appreciated that he wanted to make sure that I had a biblical foundation before I was confronted with the world's perspective or take on it. I remember being in the eighth grade, and one of the things that we do in student ministries is when kids are in middle school, we take 3 to 4 weeks and we set aside, you know, those weeks to talk about sexual purity and what it means to live a life of sexual purity. And I knew it was coming, you know, and for like 2 months beforehand, my mom made me spend every Monday afternoon in our living room talking about sex. And it was awkward and it was uncomfortable. But it was important to her and it was important to my parents that they be the ones that give me that information first. And it wasn't that they didn't trust that the people at church were going to give me a good perspective on it, but it was something that was priority, that they wanted to be the ones that were the primary disciplers and discussing that with them first. And so I appreciated this because I knew as a teenager that my parents cared about the information that I was receiving. And they cared about what I was learning, and they wanted to be part of the process. And I could see that they took seriously the responsibility to parent me in every area of my life, even in the uncomfortable, topics. My parents were around. They volunteered. Starting at a young age, if I was somewhere there or my siblings were somewhere, there was a good chance that my parents were there too. So room mom or volunteering at Awana, Sunday school teacher, classroom volunteer, field trip driver. When I was in high school, my mom was my small group leader, chaperoning trips with school. So they were there. They started when I was little, when I was in elementary school, and I didn't have a choice. And so it wasn't odd when I got to middle school or high school and my parents were always around. I had friends who were like, "Your parents are always around. Isn't that weird?" And I was like, "No, it's just what they do." and consequently, it helped my parents know my friends, which I think is an important thing too, that they knew who it was that I was spending time with. We have a very open door policy at the Walker House. It's kind of like a revolving front door. There's always somebody there. I'm the oldest of five, so there's, you know, any given time that you're at the house, there's a good chance that somebody's going to have a friend over, or they just might randomly show up. But that's because it was important to my parents that they knew who was part of our lives. And so I encourage you to do that too, to know your friends, you know your kids' friends, encourage them to be there and to be part of your lives. My parents listened, and as appropriate, they kept my secrets, which was so important that they kept my confidences. Even the little things that I would tell one parent, even like the silly things, and I'd say, "Hey, Mom, don't tell Dad." I knew she wasn't going to. It helped me to trust them with the big things. And they didn't just keep my confidences when appropriate from each other, but they also didn't tell their friends the things that, you know, were going on, that I was struggling with, that, and I think that is really important too, in creating relationships of trust, and keeping open dialogue and communication with your kids, that I knew that I could say, "Hey, Mom, I'm struggling with this," and then I wouldn't see her best friend the next day and know that her best friend knew that I was struggling with one particular area. And then they were my biggest encouragers and my greatest cheerleaders, celebrating the big things and the little things. And I think that's important because it increased my self-confidence. I knew I was loved and I knew I was supported. I knew to come to them and ultimately to God for validation. Because I knew my parents were in my corner, I wasn't searching for that validation other places. They gave me the encouragement and the support that I needed. There's a longer list of other things that I'm not really going to elaborate on, but I feel like they set me up for success. They were consistent in their expectations for me, and then they were consistent in consequences when I didn't meet those expectations. There were healthy boundaries that were established. There was a healthy response to failure. It was okay. It was okay. It was a safe place for me to mess up and do things wrong. They were honest. They kept their promises, and they loved each other. I mean, there's no doubt that my parents really loved and cared for each other. And so all of these things kind of added together to provide a really safe place for me as a teenager, a refuge from the world, which is what our kids really need. There's a lot of scary stuff out there in the world around us, and a lot of challenges. And, you know, my youngest sister is a sophomore at Lake Braddock, and she comes home almost every day with a different crazy story about something that she had to encounter, or some question that she had to answer, or the struggles that she's kind of dealing with. And so it is a scary place. And so kids need a respite. They need a safe place to come home to. They need a place where they can be reminded of their value, where they can be reminded that their value comes from God, a place where they can know that they're loved, and a place where they can be discipled, where the gospel will be preached to them, where grace will be extended, where there'll be forgiveness, where you'll extend grace to yourselves and also extend grace to them. And so that's what I am hoping and praying for you all. And some of you are in the teen years. Some of you are yet to approach them. But I hope that the years are something that you're looking forward to. I hope that it's not just a season to survive, but that you really see it as years of opportunity to help your kids grow and develop into godly young men and women who love the Lord, love his people, and have a desire to share the gospel with people around them. They're fun years. I think they're really fun as kids are figuring out who they are and who they want to be. So be encouraged. God really has, he's given you a job and a responsibility, and he thinks you're the best one to parent, you know, to be the mother to your children. And he will provide and meet your needs every single day through every single moment of the really scary thing we know as being a teenager.